Hey, so stop me if you've heard this one. I asked a pirate at the pub, what makes you want to take a woman to bed? An eye patch and a peg leg, he responded. Why? I asked him. Because it makes me think she's willing to do things that are R-rated.
I've used that a couple times in real life, and I've gotten pretty good responses every single time. I was gonna say, it's a fan favorite now.
Around you, sailors bold, and hear the tale we sing of Dr. D and Scarlet Widow, who are the stormy rings. With clever hands and daring dreams, inventor of soup, held anchor's grasp. In every port, the legend grew, the tales unsurpassed.
Hello, Arachnids. This is your host, D to the D, Dr. D, reaching out through the supervision-free source of buccaneering. I am joined today by our newest crewmate to plunder the Spanish Main, Kyle. The current commander for the French in Summer of Plunder 2025. I did eventually reach out to him because he said some slanderous remarks about the English in the Discord, and we deserve retribution. So I decided to have him come on. Welcome, Mr. Kyle. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. We'll see how I'm doing by the end of the podcast, but I probably deserve anything that you guys have for me.
Arr, dirty French.
As a completely and totally unbiased podcast, let me just say that an extension from the English to the French in this campaign bite me. All right. So anyway, today on Arachne, we're going to be talking to him about how the campaign has been for him and, of course, his nerd origin story, as always. And when we talk about these things, inevitably, we like to have a topic because all the other commanders that have come on have had something to talk about. So we're probably going to talk about campaign mechanics because I guess Mr. Kyle here loves himself a real good community-run campaign. Is that safe to say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Summer of Plunder is one of the most unique things in miniature wargaming, so I'm excited to talk more.
There is nothing quite like it. It's damn impressive. But first, we got business. Today on Arachne, we got to thank all these people for being dirty, dirty pirates. We got Cyril S., Derek S., Quim B., Nick B., and Aleph is the way. Thank you very much for being a digital nomad on the Patreon. That really, really does help us out considerably. It helps pay for all the digital stuff that we need to pay for to keep this shindig going. There will be more time, hopefully, donated to the podcast in the near future because my commute is about to get a heck of a lot shorter. So there has been an outcry for, of all things, I can't believe it. People have been asking for Calamity Jack, of all things. So that will be coming back. The audio drama will return. Calamity Jack is coming back, and so is the ever spunky narrator. They'll be back in no time. So if you're interested in that kind of stuff, make sure you keep paying attention. And I might even make some audio dramas for some other stuff. Maybe we'll get some Spanish Main stuff in there. We'll have the story of some dirty pirate who's, running around doing dirty pirate stuff. As I like to call him, water-based opportunist.
Esmeralda and Beetlejuice.
And Beetlejuice. That's definitely not what he's called. Arachne is a part of the Professional Casual Network. If you'd like to support the network, please sign up at our Patreon or purchase some hot swag at streamlabs.com/casualnetwork1. I'm probably going to put the Raise the Black logo on a shirt. It's actually really cool. I actually really like that art, so eventually that will be a thing, and we'll probably put words on it and all that, so just keep your eyes open for that. I personally am sponsored by Monument Hobbies. If you like really good paint, really good brushes, and really handsome men and women, then you could always go to Monument Hobbies and use the code PROFESSIONALCASUAL at checkout to get yourself a swanky discount. And of course, if you would like to watch me use those paints in actual painting, then you can come to the Twitch at Professional Casual, where I am painting Mondays, Sundays, and Thursdays most of the time. And we've been doing Monday-themed Blood and Plunder, especially while Summer of Plunder is going on. So if you want to watch me paint Dutchmen for literally forever and then eventually start painting Englishmen like I did, do that. Or don't. I'm not your dad. You can do whatever you want. Baron of Dice makes some of the coolest dice in the biz. You can use the code Arachne at checkout to get yourself a 5% discount. And if you do, you can, of course, get the new Baron of Dice Port Royal Oak and Iron and also Blood and Plunder dice. They're very, very pretty. They roll fairly well from what I understand. I haven't actually gotten my hands on any of them quite yet, but from what I understand, they're pretty well balanced. And of course, we can't forget our sponsor, Mr. Laser, MrLaserDesquare.site. There, I did it. I talked business. Guys, let's get to the meat and potatoes of what we are talking about.
Ooh, we need to get some of those Blood and Plunder dice.
Yeah, it's just one. It's one of those things. You know, the thing is when you're in the middle of a move, you're scared to ship anything to either house because you don't know the rules for the new place and you don't know if you're going to be gone by the time it shows
up. I ordered stuff from Amazon today and I shipped to the new place.
Yeah, I have also done that. I've got new fighting tops on the way for the new frigate.
Sweet.
The Kraken. That'll be coming out fairly soon. But Kyle, you have been press ganged into whatever the heck it is that we're doing here. So I always like to ask people who come onto the show, what is their nerd origin story? Take it away, sir.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, my nerd origin story starts probably back when I was like 2 years old, because I was a huge like dino nerd when I was a really young kid. And then I saw Jurassic Park at age 3, and I transitioned from that into kind of wanting to be a storyteller. I fell in love with Star Wars when I was young, and then I loved geography in grade school. And as time went on, those things just sort of became what I was sort of built. It was just sort of built inside me, so to speak. And so I ended up going to college for film. And now today I'm a freelance filmmaker and advertiser. And I've also picked up other kind of nerdy interests like birding and photography too. So that's sort of what kind of started that sort of thing. And then I grew up in a family of three other siblings, and we played a lot of games. So I've always had a little bit of that competitive edge. And once I got into the real world and had some disposable income, I found out about Star Wars Legion, which got me into miniature wargaming. And then I've been doing wargaming ever since.
Okay. Got a few follow-up questions. One, as a three-year-old, how did Jurassic Park not scare the hell out of you with that Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Yes, I have to say that my parents were very adamant about the fact that Steven Spielberg wouldn't let his children see that movie. So therefore, I was not allowed to see it, even though I was about 10 to 12 years older than Steven Spielberg's children.
Yeah, you know, that's a good question.
Thank you.
I think I was just so amazed by seeing these dinosaurs on screen that the whole like scary aspect never even crossed my mind. It scared the heck out of my sister though. And she is like 5 or 6 years older than me. So
nice. You have a really, really good little dig to get at her every once in a while.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So here we go. Second question. What stories do you need to tell yourself to continuously beat up your betters in the English faction of the campaign? What stories do you have to tell yourself to do that?
Oh man, you gotta say your prayers and.
do you have a really good like French captain accent that you use when you get really angry and you're just like angry at the English?
Not at all. The funny thing is, like, to my knowledge, I am not French at all. I have no French background whatsoever. Although I will say, like, so on the French Discord, you know, I try to get a little period piece in my when I'm writing to people in the Discord. But the guy that's really good at it is our second in command, who goes by the name of Henry in the Discord.
He's gunning for your spot.
That's right. Got to watch out for him and the English. He's a French Canadian, so he's got a much more vested interest, I think, in being French. That is one of the things that's kind of cool and unexpected about being a part of the kind of French team was I wasn't expecting there to be people in that Discord that were like passionately about being on the French team. And it's kind of cool, you know?
That is fun.
Something I've noticed, at least from the English standpoint, and I love the English Discord, don't get me wrong, is it definitely seems like when people, and from what I understand, you're fairly new to Blood and Plunder.
Yeah, I got the game 3 years ago.
Right. So which we'll talk about in a sec. But from what I understand, it seems like most of the people that when they first start playing, I notice tend to gravitate towards the English I think it's probably because it's what they know, right? They could speak English and, you know, maybe they know the history a little bit better.
Yep.
I mean, it's interesting that maybe the people that you find in the other factions maybe are a little bit more passionate because they've kind of like marinated in this soup that we're in right now. Do you think there's something to that?
I think there's definitely something to that. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I know, like, I mean, you can kind of see it on the map. We've concentrated a lot of attacks on the north. Mm-hmm. And that was just something that we had done in the beginning, cause that's where people were interested in attacking. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay.
It's the French way. It's called the lawn for a reason.
That's right. So yeah, they like that ability to, I think, extend themselves and extend some history back too.
So I'm going to try this. So funnily enough, as this all started, I actually recently became sort of fascinated with the French language, and I've been trying to learn like little words and all this. Kara is, I've already tried seducing her with French. So for your friend Henry, I'm going to say, is he a...
Ennui. His bio, name is Ennui.
Bio homme? Is that right? Is he a handsome man? Is that what the word is? Is that what bio, bio homme?
Home. It's home. You don't home. Say the E, it's home. Home. So sadly, I should have learned Spanish because my family is literally from Spain and Hispanic, like islands and from Spain. And halfway through my high school career, my harp teacher was like, you can't learn Spanish. You need French. So I really struggle with languages.
And then very last comment before we actually go on. It was funny that you brought up a couple key little points that I thought were interesting. Our good friend, or my good friend, Kara's sort of good friend, I guess, too. But Tim, not from the network, he also, very similar to you, has a very similar like path. He works in film stuff. He lives over in L.A. I know he recently just started listening to the show. Tim, I love you. I miss you. And hopefully we'll meet each other at Adepticon, I would hope. But he actually just recently decided he wants to get into Blood and Plunder, so he's buying the starter because of the show. So I just figured I'd call that out. I really appreciate the fact that, you know, people like you guys exist, people who are just really passionate and storytelling and all that stuff. I think you guys get along just great. He also really loves Star Wars, and, you know, he also started playing Legion. Anyway, but that aside, back to what we were talking about. So you obviously have made an impression on the Blood and Plunder community in that you are one of the, you could say, a community leader, especially right now. How did you find your way to Blood and Plunder?
Sure. So a few years ago, I was a part of, I went to Adepticon, and I was playing Star Wars Legion, got knocked out of their tournament because I'm just an okay player. So I spent the next couple of days walking the show floor, and there was this demo for Blood and Plunder. It was just the sea demo. You got two big ships, a bunch of guys on it, and immediately I saw it, and I'm just like, what is this? I love pirates. I got to check this out. So you stand, you know, at Adepticon, the lines are huge to get into these demos. Mm-hmm. So you're standing there for about an hour to wait your turn. And you're learning as other people are learning the game, because you're just sort of watching them. And I'm really quickly, I just gravitated towards it because it's a very simple game to learn. Like, I find that the basic rules are much simpler than something like Legion, mm-hmm. or Crisis Protocol or Batman Miniatures game or anything else that I've played before. So I immediately was like, I'm interested in this, and it's got a cool theme. And then I played the demo, and I ended up the last day of Adepticon, I grabbed the last two-player starter set that they had.
Excellent.
And that was pretty awesome. It sort of started things off.
I appreciate how excited you are just thinking about starting the game.
I have to say that the rules for Summer of Plunder are, well, for Blood and Plunder, in general, are very, very, very simple to grasp, and it's like it's easy to get a hold of. And then the more and more I play it, the more and more I realize those little weird interactions. You're just like, oh my gosh, there's actually way more depth to this than I could possibly imagine. It's just like it doesn't end.
That's how it worked out that time I played with just the Piragua. Mm-hmm. When I played with Mike, it was like a 150 or 200 point game, and I was like, I don't have room to take my Bermuda sloop, that's too many points. So I took a Piragua. I didn't even realize that the low profile was going to help me out. and he thought I was like gaming him the whole time. I was like, I didn't even know I was gaming you, but yes, like I just brought this because it costs less than the sloop.
And it should be said that what she's talking about is they were applying the low profile rule to muskets, not just artillery. So guess what? Really hard That's to hit true. Them when you can't hit them with a musket.
We were definitely playing incorrectly with muskets and artillery, but he was mostly shooting cannons at me on that game.
That's the Dutch for you. Of course, we kind of alluded to this at least a little bit before. Obviously, you became the commander for the French forces this round. First question, first comment, how dare you? Two, why the French?
Yeah, so after I got Blood and Plunder, I started building the models. I went on to the Blood and Plunder Facebook page, started learning about the Summer of Plunder. And I think before that, they have like some sort of like pirate painting.
The pirate paint off, yeah.
Thank you, yeah. And that got me even more interested just because I had never seen a community event like that before. So I jumped in, started painting all my models and did that. And then when it came time to like decide which side to choose, first I decided to choose the French because they're obviously the best faction and better than the English.
Wrong.
But then the real reason was because they had as their main prize support a bark ship. And I was just like, this is crazy. You could win a huge ship just for being a part of this faction and playing this game. So that prize support is what drove me to choose them. And then what was really kind of cool about it was at that time, Tyler Stone, who runs a blog called Dead Man's Chest. It's a Blood and Plunder blog. He was leading the French, but he was also the guy who taught me the demo game at Adepticon.
Sure.
Yeah, it was just this cool way to be like, oh, I can now like say thank you to this guy for bringing me into this cool new game. Kicked it off from there. And then 2 years went by. The Blood and Pigment team wanted some new leadership just to inject some new blood up top. And so Tyler put my name in the hat. And so that's how I became the leader of the French. And I did win that bark that first year. So that was pretty cool.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Do you use the bark very often?
I use the bark every once in a while. I do tend to play Blood and Plunder on land because my wife, this is the one miniatures game I can play with my wife because she's like... Yeah, right. She's like, it's got just enough rules to be fun and throw dice, and it's not overly complicated. And that's why she loves it. So
Yes, that's why I got us into it. I was like, pirates and ships and yar!
Right? And I started her off with the pirates too. And just recently, she started, like this year, she's been playing with a lot of other factions and just played the natives last week.
Ooh.
That was really exciting for her.
Watching the natives in the Summer of Plunder has me curious to want to play natives.
Yeah. I mean, they're a really intriguing faction because they skirt so many of the regular rules of the game.
Yeah.
Few comments. One, Tyler, I love Tyler. Dead Man's Chest is an absolutely phenomenal place. I definitely recommend you go read stuff there. He's got multiple games. He's got Blood and Valor. He does model reviews. That's a really, really great blog. Definitely highly recommend it, but not sponsored. Two, definitely, if you have the opportunity to say anything nice to any of the people from Blood and Pigment, do not hesitate. They do so much for this community. They've even helped me.
So much.
Yeah.
So much.
Just random off little things. Like they've...
Good people. They just do what makes sense as a human being instead of like trying to screw people over.
And I definitely recommend that if you can do anything to make their jobs easier, I would plead with you to please do that because they definitely are one of the reasons that this game is as good and as popular as it is. I think that website does insane work. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah. It really is kind of the core of the community for this game.
Yeah, 100%. And then as far as ability for you to just like step in like that and become a leader like that, it's kind of interesting. So how has the campaign felt so far? As of time of recording, we just finished week 6.
That's right.
So we're in the home stretch. So how have you been feeling up to this point? How's it been going?
How many weeks do we have?
Nine, right? Nine or 10.
Nine? Yeah. Okay.
I should probably know that.
Sure. He's got a 5-year plan ready. I can already hear it in his voice.
At least one of us should know that.
I mean, it's been wild to be on the kind of leadership side of things, because it's just a big test of like your own ability to try to strategize and organize. And then there's obviously a little bit of politicking with in between nations. The hardest part of it is obviously like this organizing, because you have to organize people and get them to make sure they're hitting the right attacks and or the right defenses, and figuring out how to get them to do that and how to keep it in your own head, like how many points are counted. That took a couple weeks. I think everyone kind of saw that. Oh, sorry.
Go into depth a little bit more about how you did that with your team, because I've only experienced what we've done in the Pirates team. So I'm curious how you guys did it in the French team.
Sure. Yeah, so... I'll wait for the siren if you guys can hear that.
They're coming to get you. They're coming to punish you for playing.
Yeah, you're totally the bad guy. Pirates are coming for you.
17th century.
I am worried. The Pirates are winning right now.
They sure are.
The way that we handled it is I basically tell everyone these are our priorities for the week. Let me know when you've played and how many points you've played for.
Mm-hmm. So do you guys vote on the priorities, or do you determine what the priorities are?
I do a little bit of both. Part of me wants to just do all of the priorities because the French are the, you know, the French, the English, we're all like, you know, the kings, right? So there is that sort of like
how sure, no much democracy.
That's right. So how much do you want to be?
You feel like you're a monarch. Go you.
Right, exactly. But the truth is like that doesn't make for a great community building experience.
Sure. Exactly, yeah.
So what I find is I tend to propose ideas. Go, oh, what do you think about attacking these places? And then I'll have players vote on it. And then there are some weeks where if I have a gut feeling, I'll just sort of go with that gut feeling.
Feel like we're going with this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that working. So we vote every week in Pirates on a lot of different things. I actually started that. I was like, can we just please have polls? I can't have this so many questions. Just give me polls.
So just for the record, again, few points here. England has a parliament. So again, we're much better than you. We have a Magna Carta. It means we have a really big cart full of democracy. Okay. Just for the record. And just so you know, if you're going to call the House of State like King Louis the 16th, I hate to break to you, Louis the 16th didn't do so hot. Him and his wife, they were on the receiving end of a real sharp knife.
It was the 14th that we're all really, you know, excited about. Louis the 14th was the cutie.
The cutie patootie, the old sun king. Well, technically, he's the king right now, if I remember correctly, in the
yeah, that's
the,
right.
The yeah, lore of it. So yeah. You, right now, you are the sun king, Kyle. Congratulations. Okay.
You are the Sun King's armada leader for Blood and Plunder.
I'm not quite a cutie patootie, but I'll...
No, I said the Sun King was a cutie patootie, not you, silly.
I think you're a cutie patootie, Kyle. I like the way the sun just hits your face just right. It's so cute. Very cute. Cute little lips. But anyway, so you go into that, you have your estate general that you're talking to. So I think it's cool that you kind of have that middle ground there. That's fun. I think it's a good way to at least include people, but you know, you have the horse that's kind of pulling that cart in a single direction. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, even with the voting in Pirates, I've noticed we still need some strong leaders to weigh in and say we should do ABC. Because otherwise it can be too many options. And so like, I appreciate when the leaders and or opinionated team members come in and say, let's do 1, 2, 3. And I tell them every time, I'm like, thank you for having a plan and a strategy. Cause I don't, but I will follow your strategy. It sounds good.
It does seem like most people are there just to kind of play. Right. And they want that pressure of the strategy to be taken off of them, which is nice then.
Yes. Well, it's good that you feel that way, that you like to take that pressure off of them, because
sometimes even at like a game store, which I'm not sure I don't know if you run events at your local store, but sometimes all it takes for you to do like a league at a store is literally some people just want the guardrails. They just want these little rails. They want to be railroaded right to a thing. And then you literally could pick them up, put them in front of a table and be like, here you go, buddy. And then you give them like some keys or whatever to jingle in front of them. And they're like, oh, ha, 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 I'm having such a good time. And there's a lot of people that really like that. And I think that you that's a good way to do it. But as far as France in the campaign, have you been feeling like they've been doing well?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we're second place. We had been first place for a few weeks. So I feel pretty good about where we are. But I will say that, you know, what cost did it take for us to get there? And the cost, obviously, as you're well aware of, was to kind of throw the English downriver. So I'm sure that that will come and bite us. Like, I'm well aware that we have our comeuppance at some point, and so that doesn't make me feel too good in the late stages of the game.
Let's just say that
French and English should always be at each other's throats.
It's kind of our thing. Yeah, it's definitely a France-English thing. There was definitely a point where after the first week, there was literally like, I just imagine there's like the race, right? Where people are standing there getting ready and the guy with the gun like shoots it. And I just imagine in my head that happened. And then the French guy immediately got up and just punched us in the back of the head by immediately attacking the Northeast and going for New England. And I was like, geez, is this how this is going to happen? And then it happened again. And then it happened again. And then it happened again. And I'm like, okay, clearly we're going to have some problems here. And just so you know, just because we're last doesn't mean that we're not still the best. Okay. I just want to put that out there.
Well, you're tied for last now.
That's true. You're right. Us and our good old buddies, the Dutch, we've been doing real great. It's been great. It's great. Great.
I think the English and the Dutch suffer from too many cooks in the kitchen.
Oh,
all right. It's fair. I don't know how you would get to that conclusion, but that's fair.
Well, you've told me a little bit about how things work in the English team, and
I told
sounds
you
like
nothing.
You just...
What? I told you a damn thing.
I mean, not like anything that I could take back to the Pirates and strategically utilize, but you guys are very large, and it sounds like you have difficulty coming to a concisive plan forward.
So that she's actually right. I have mentioned that, and as I've said earlier, it seems like the English, they were definitely the biggest at the very beginning, just because I think newer players tended to kind of veer towards that like kind of faction. And I think, and you might be able to espouse on this a little bit more. That's a big word, but if your team is larger, do you think it makes the things you do more difficult due to the unwieldy nature of swinging around a giant greatsword? Would you rather be the rapier that just goes in and stabs real accurate?
Yes, but at the same token, I'd rather be the rapier than being the knife.
Sure.
That has very few people mm-hmm. playing. Because I think like the natives have the opposite struggle where they don't have enough people playing. Mm-hmm. So because there's this fog of war, anytime someone plays a native attack or defense and it's not within their game plan, mm-hmm. it can like really screw up a team that has so few players. But then again, like you just said, it's like as the English, if you have just a horde of people, if you can't get them on the same page, you're going to run into those problems. And I imagine that the Pirates have a little bit of that too, because I think, you know, you've got the two-player starter set is geared towards the English and the Pirates. So I think people are more likely to be one of those two factions mm-hmm. than the other ones.
I agree.
So you've just got that, like, yeah, that's a lot of people to corral. Like,
but I think that there are more English than Pirates, like significantly more. Yeah, I think people choose English 50% more over choosing Pirates because Pirates are the bad guys and some of us just want to be upstanding citizens. And so, you know, give me that privateer paper and let me pretend that I'm not a pirate and I'll work for Queen Elizabeth.
I'm always surprised that people would choose the English over the Pirates. And you know, maybe this is me as a movie person, but you know, it's like Pirates of the Caribbean, the English are kind of the bad guys. Mm-hmm. So I have always like my plan when I got the game was initially just to be the Pirates until I saw that sweet French prize plunder.
It's just something about a big white flag with a bunch of little fancy ornaments all over it and then gold. It really just speaks to your inner divine providence, you know, divine rule and all, you know, it's good stuff. It just gets you excited to wake up in the morning.
It's a shame this is not a video podcast, because the joy and pleasure that just washed over their faces as we talked about that was beautiful.
There's something about a flag, let me tell you. If you get on a boat with a flag, you just sail somewhere, put that sucker in the ground, you're like, all right, we did it, boys. Congratulations. We claimed an entire place that people have been living on for 100 years.
Do you have a flag? Oh, well, then we own this land. No flag for you. We own it.
I just got to say, as a side note on flags and blood and plunder, the Scottish this year, like, they're this unaligned force, and they're just like, we want our flags around. Because I had reached out to them, and I'm like, how can I curry some favor? And they're like, put our flags in your photos. And I'm like, okay.
How many flags do the Scottish have? Because I feel like, I mean, Scottish tartans are very diverse, so you could have a million.
True. When they talked to me about it, I was like, let me go look up their flag. And I'm just like, oh, man, there are a lot of options here.
Probably a lot of unicorns, I assume. Probably a lot of unicorns in their flags. Because that's like a Scottish thing.
Harps and harpies.
Harpies
with boobs.
Bagpipes, right?
Yeah,
definitely bagpipes for sure. I have to share, there's a great tartan yoga Instagram channel where the guys, okay, you know, they don't wear anything under those tartans, but they wear traditional tartans in various different ways. So sometimes they're like literally folding up the like stretched out piece of material and just wrapping it around them in the traditional way. But sometimes they're just wearing like more modern tartans, but they're yoga guys. And then they do yoga poses without showing anything in their tartans. It's so great. It's beautiful.
I love that for you.
How do you feel? Well, first of all, France and Scotland, very historic alliance, just because they hate, you know, they hate the English. So
who could that was them? Another like reason why we reached out to them. Because it has been fun. I don't think it was necessarily like, we didn't necessarily go into the campaign thinking this. But when the first week sort of started and we realized like, oh, we're kind of trying to replay history a bit, we just sort of leaned into it hard. So,
because your alliance with the Spanish, very historical, something that happened was one of the kings passed away in Spain, and then King Louis was like, you know what they need? My cousin. He just like threw him, or his nephew or whatever, just like threw him in charge, and it created one of the alliances that actually lasted quite a long time.
I think that's one of the really fun things about playing these historical games. You don't have to follow the historical storyline, but it's really fun too.
Yeah. Art creates form. So how do you feel about the prospects of potentially winning? I would say France is in a very good position to take Summer of Plunder 2025. Unfortunately, the English will be the kingmakers. So, you know, that's a real shame. It's coming for you. But yeah, what do you think about that?
Well, I do think that your point actually is maybe why I'm a little hesitant into thinking that we're going to win. I have a really good feeling that the Pirates will probably win. I feel like they've done a really good job of navigating a lot of relationships, especially on the command side of things. Even doing something as simple as this past week, they like gave the English some land. And you're like, okay, they're trying to curry some favor for the end game.
And us. So as of the end of this week, they did cede back. I forget where it was. It was one of the places. They did cede back to the English one of the places that was taken. By the way, we had us a bountiful little get-together over in Quebec, and unfortunately, it didn't quite work out how we wanted it to, but we got damn close.
It's true. It's true.
At least she got to go to Quebec.
It's true. Maybe we should have a weekly reunion there. You know, just go there, have a couple drinks, maybe shoot some guns. It'll be great. It'll have a good old grand old time. Yes, I have some poutine. It'll be great. Mushy
We'd
peas.
Love for you to waste your points at Quebec. We'd love to.
But yeah, that's cool to know. I am rooting for you. I think you're a great guy. I think if you guys win, it's well-deserved. Joking aside, I do think the French have played a very clean game. You guys have done a very good job on punching down. It's been great. You're big bullies and it's fine. You know, but that's what history is about, is just, you know, comeuppance.
I'm definitely playing French soon-ish, but Dutch is first. I have to play Dutch and then I'm playing French. The Summer of Plunder 2027, I'll be French.
I can put you in for the leadership position if you want.
No, no, I don't have that kind of time or focus. No, thank you.
So what are you going to play for 2026? You going to play Dutch for 2026?
I think so. Yeah, that's my plan. The flute is really for my Dutch team that I'm building next.
And for the record, I'm the only one who's painted Dutch models in this house. So I think her stuff.
I'm painting a flute. Jeez.
It's not a Dutch model, technically. Technically speaking.
It's going to have Ariel and Eric in it. So you can just forget about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Is that right? Forget about what? What mechanics from this campaign do you think could be used for other games or other ways to include a community, maybe at a smaller scale, maybe like a store? Maybe you want to run a more local campaign. How do you think you would adapt these rules to that?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
Thank you.
I think that the main thing to take away from Summer of Plunder compared to what people are used to playing when it comes to like doing a league or what have you is Summer of Plunder is really more about team building, and it's about just building a community on top of that. You know, you think about your average like league, right? And the whole idea of that is to play your games and score your points. Maybe you've got, you know, maybe someone's doing a fun system where they have weekly objectives that score you more points, but it's usually still very like you centered.
And you need to win.
Yes, and you need to win, right? The thing that's really neat about Summer of Plunder is that it's just awarding people for playing. They don't even ask you if you win your games.
Exactly, exactly. You just play. You just play. I played a game this week with another girl who's playing Summer of Plunder, and we played on TTS. Neither of us had ever set up our own TTS game. So it took us like 2 days to set up the game. Like we had to like spend 2 hours on two different days to set up the game to figure it out. We had to scale down models. There was a lot of tweaking we had to do, but we did. We figured it out and we played a couple rounds, and then we were like, well, we played. we're just going to call this one because it's been a lot of work. And, you know, next week, maybe we'll play a full game. But, you know, still, like, it's just about putting in the effort. And we put in a lot of effort, even though we didn't play a lot of rounds. We put in a lot of effort and we learned a lot. And we had a lot of fun with each other. And I think that's really what is important. We got to connect with each other. And that was so much more fun than winning or losing.
I couldn't agree more, to be honest. Like, that to me is why you play these games, right? Is to kill some time doing something that's fun. And to have something, game mode, or, you know, an event that is pushing a game and pushing a community towards that is really nice. It's really refreshing too. Like, you know, I said earlier that I play Star Wars Legion. That's how I got into it. And that's the game that I play the most of. People only want to play competitive for that game.
Yeah.
And it's kind of exhausting at times.
Yeah.
I really enjoy Blood and Plunder's just sort of relaxed.
Just nature. Play. Yeah. Have fun.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't want to do this for competitive reasons. I have to compete at work, okay? I'm trying to build a career. I do that for 8 hours a day. When I'm done, I just want to relax. And if my gaming feels like a job, it's no more. No, I'm done.
That's one big advantage of historicals, right? Is that you can essentially play out something that did happen in real life. And you're like, oh yeah, what about if these what if scenarios where you do have a documented case of there were 300 people here. This is roughly what they were wearing and carrying around. There's how many bullets they had. And it's a lot more readily available as opposed to like a 40K game where you're like, okay, in made up space land, there's an island and a specific planet. And it happens to be made out of demon skin or whatever. You know, it's like you just make the stuff up as you go.
I've never thought of historical games like that, but you're right. That is a very interesting aspect because, like, when I think of historical games, how do we make sure that we acted out exactly how it happened?
And I think campaigns like this are a good example of, as you have said, with like the Scottish and the Spanish, it's like it's interesting that you have some, like maybe on a really low level, but you have people who have like an emotional investment of an outcome because of the fact of like, oh yeah, we do know that this happened. And it's interesting that you can kind of role play that real specific thing. I think that's neat.
We are French Canadian. We do want to make sure that we win this one.
That's right. I do think that is also, though, a really good point when it comes to like how to get people to think about creating like their own campaign that's a little different and a little more community centered, which is, you know, Summer of Plunder is really cool because it is a world building thing. You're looking at, when you play a game of Blood and Plunder, you're thinking about, I'm doing a battle that takes place at this specific point in history, while the world was shaped this way, right? So it's got, as you had mentioned, a historical tapestry to it. When you're thinking about trying to implement something, any other kind of game, it's really going like, what is that top level thing? What is that top level engagement? If we'll just take Star Wars Legion, for example, since I can kind of talk to that one, you know, that's, you're battling on a specific planet, but the overall conflict is like, you know, the conflict between the rebels and the Empire across the galaxy. Mm-hmm. If you're building a, like an event for people, the thread that connects the community together should be based around an overarching conflict.
Right.
And then everyone's battles that they're doing week to week are just the engagements within it.
And I think and this is something that I've probably spoken to ad nauseum on the show, on the various episodes that we've talked about, Cam. If you can have a game where you have an emotional attachment to not the fact that you've won, but maybe the fact that, oh, I took too many losses while doing this to get the win. Any kind of campaign that can create some kind of emotional or visceral reaction, I think really amps up the gameplay, and in a good and a bad way, right? Because sometimes you see the worst in people who are very competitive, and they're like, oh, my Captain Jim John, who's got three arms and a machine gun for eyebrows, he dies, and now my entire strategy's ruined, right? And it's like, but sometimes I think with the historical aspect and the fact that you're doing like a campaign-y type thing, I think that's really interesting, because now what does your faction do without Jim Jam? Who doesn't have eyebrows for machine guns or whatever. It's like, now who steps up in that position? Can you have the forlorn hope kind of last holdout type thing or whatever? And
totally.
And I, you know, obviously the campaign in Summer of Plunder is not quite so granular, but I do think an asymmetric warfare type campaign does have merits. And I would assume you agree on that.
Absolutely. And I think that it has even more merits if you're doing something that's just like a local.
Yeah.
Right. 100%. Because when you're doing something that's a little more local, you can have that granularity because everyone knows each other, and it's the balance, you know, balancing a local thing compared to balancing something that people can play globally is very different.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there are good examples of that stuff on YouTube eventually. You know, there's tons of different channels of different games and all that, but you know, it's interesting, and I'm jealous, quite honestly, that some of these people can make these campaigns where it's like, oh yeah, you know, we moved this piece on a board and, you know, over there, there's like, I secretly put 300 points into that. And even from historical gaming aspect of it, I've noticed that the Napoleonic people tend to really love that kind of stuff. And in my opinion, my personal favorite thing that I'd want to do is you take one of those old, like million year old board games where it's like you use a chit. And let's just say, because we know Blood and Bayonets is coming out soon, and it's supposed to be based in the Peninsular Campaign. I think, and I would love to do this, where you buy one of those old Avalon Hill type board games where it's like you move the chit and then you fight and then you play it on the table. Yeah. And you're like, okay, well, then you're like, okay, well, now we know this division is kind of roughed up. Maybe they don't have as many guys. You got to roll for casualties or whatever. And I think that kind of stuff really amps up the storytelling component of it ad nauseum. And do you think you could do that for a Caribbean-based game? Do you think that there's a board game out there that you can think of that'd be like, oh, yeah, I have 500 freebooters on, you know, Port Royal or whatever. The real one, not the fake one up in Canada land.
That's a good question, because I don't have any other, like, board games like that. I do think what's really kind of neat, though, that – because what you're talking about is visual, right? Mm-hmm. You have this visual thing that people can see and go, oh, yeah, these guys are here or there. And, you know, to a different extent, like the Summer of Plunder has that with the map. So every week you can look at the map and see how it's changed and who now controls what territory. And just giving people that sort of tactile thing to go back to does a lot in building the experience in everyone's head. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we're fighting for this space.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it does help that in this situation, it's like an overlay on Google Maps, right? So I don't even know how they did it. But if you actually scroll out far enough on their map, it actually just shows you like Google Earth. It's kind of funny when you do it that way. But they added that map overlay. And if you play a historical game, it's a lot easier to do that kind of stuff because of the fact that you don't need to draw the map. It already exists. It's called the Earth. I don't know if you've been there. It's not like you got to make up some fantastical realm to do these things. But in your case, like, let's just say hypothetically, because I kind of dabble with Legion. Like, I've always like kind of been curious because I think it's a really great game system. And I think there's a lot of narrative components to it. But if you were to take a board game like Rebellion or The Outer Rim or whatever, and then you can move the pieces on there and let that dictate how the games go, I think that that adds like a crazy component, especially if you add stuff like Armada and X-Wing and all the other.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. I mean, Legion's a really cool, like, I should say the Star Wars universe is a really cool way to do that because you have it on these multiple levels.
Yep.
You can have your space combat and your planetary combat. I'd love for someone to like try to take something like Summer of Plunder and skin it for Star Wars. But again, it's like you need the community to be willing to just be like, I'm all in on playing games, whether I win or lose.
I think if you are lucky enough to live near people who are willing to do that stuff with you, you should praise them every second of the day just to have the opportunity to do these kinds of things. It's great. Yeah. I've had a few people in my life who've been willing to do that kind of stuff. Tim,
there's a 90s song about that. Praise you.
I don't listen to music. Music's stupid. Never heard of it in my whole life. Well, maybe that could be you, right?
Yeah, I guess it's true.
Because you obviously have some background in this. I would love to see some of the other Blood and whatever games kind of have similar type things. I don't think I would ever put that on Blood and Pigment because they've already got enough on their plate. Even in the case of, let's just say, Thieves Harbor, because Goebel, who's been on the show, he's the English commander this year. He's in charge of the Port Royal like version of what Blood and Pigment is. And I think that if he were to do a campaign, like a Port Royal campaign, you could have like, oh, on this specific part of the island, you know, if you fight here, it's very much like a Mordheim campaign in that regard.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, if you fight over this sunken part of the city, you get +1 gold every game or whatever, right? I think you can do it to any game because obviously if you're fighting over land, there you have like the land means something to somebody.
Most winters I play a Batman Miniatures game, which is kind of a dying game at the moment.
Yeah, but it's Batman.
Yeah. Well, I just painted Riddler for that. Not a couple, like a week ago. It's a very good game. Night Models.
Love the models. Hate the game.
Yeah, Night Models is a really bad company.
Yeah. But the game is really quite compelling. It's very different than any other miniatures game on the market. The thing that, so when I played Summer of Plunder, one of my immediate thoughts was like, you could do this, but with Gotham City, just skin Gotham City that way and it'd be awesome.
And they actually did do that. There was an Arkham Knight campaign that I think happened at the end of, I think it was like, it might have been, it was either first or second edition. There was a map based thing at some point.
Cool. Very cool.
Where do you even go from there? So like, obviously it's endless, right? You know, like there's just so many ways you can modulate this kind of stuff. And I agree that you can have a very local group to do that kind of stuff. Locally, I'll call it out, the Horus Heresy group that when I first moved up to Massachusetts was a very, very good introduction for me to this campaign system where they have a quarterly game in the Horus Heresy universe. So it's 40K, you know, 30K in this case. But they would have like a Battlefleet Gothic, or they would do a land game, or they would have some kind of like variation, you know, be like Zone Mortalis or whatever. And every quarter, they would have this map. It was kind of rough. It wasn't necessarily like, if you win this game, this is how much land you gain kind of thing. It was very much a narrative driven, hey, you're fighting over the center of this city. So let's just say over the course of a year, you fought for ownership of all the key parts of a particular planet. And then going into the overarch of like the next year, you're fighting over the system, right? It goes to show you that everything you do as far as the campaign system, it doesn't necessarily need to be like a numbers driven thing. It could very much be a abstract, hey, you won this fight, you've gained the capital city or whatever, you took over the mega cannon. You can use that to make very loose, probably unbalancing rules for the following game, just to kind of give you some sort of incentive. But again, I think it really enhances that flavor. I would assume you agree with that.
Completely, yeah. Yeah, I like that idea. You know, that would be something I think too. I don't know how granular Summer of Plunder can go in the future.
Right.
But even making like each location give you a certain type of bonus, I think would be really, really neat.
Tracking that could be tough, I can see.
Yeah.
Just because there's so many. 32 locations?
I think so. There's quite a few locations on the map.
It just goes to show you, thank you very much, Blood and Pigment, for putting this on. It's very amazing.
I think we could use half the locations and it would be more interesting because I think we would have a little bit more conflict. I feel like we have a few too many locations. I don't know how it's been in the previous Summer of Plunders, so this might have been the correct choice based on, you know, how previous Summer of Plunders went.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because the previous Summer of Plunder had more locations and they have been sort of scaling down to, I think, help build some of those conflicts. There is, though, there's a lot of like, there's always been a lot of talk about how much conflict do you want to have?
And right.
Because there's a lot of people who are like, well, all these places are changing hands week to week. That's not quite historical.
Sure.
Which is true.
That's true. Yeah. But the world is big, but also we want to fight and draw some blood.
Exactly. That's where, like, I think the attacking stuff and the changing of locations is what draws people in. They want to see, ooh, what happened? You know, so if everyone's just huddling up, it might be a little more historical and that locations aren't changing as much week to week. But I'm not sure that that makes for as good of a play experience.
I don't know what team it would be that would be like the introverts of Blood and Plunder and they would just like skate around and, but I feel like there's at least one team that would be like, we're not going to fight. We're just going to go steal what everybody left over.
Well, that's what being a water-based opportunist is all about. I think you just answered your own question.
It might be the natives. Like,
wow.
In my heart of hearts,
wow.
In my heart of hearts, like I want the pirates to win, but I feel like the natives have the best opportunity to like just scoop it at the end because they're unpredictable. There's nothing you can really pin down on the natives. Even the pirates have a few things you can pin down and say the pirates are going to want this, the pirates are going to want that, but the natives, they might be able to settle anywhere.
I'm not going to touch that one. I'm not touching that.
I really like the natives. It's funny, the natives always have at the beginning of the game everyone kind of semi roots for them, whether that's, you know, historical guilt or whatnot. Everyone kind of, you know.
Historical guilt.
Yeah. If our team can't win, it would be nice if the natives can do it.
So it'd be so good if we could pay back the natives that we can't pay back in real life.
Right.
That are probably being played by rich white men, but okay.
Yeah. Right.
I will say this campaign, the Spanish and the natives have been going hot and heavy all campaign, man.
Yeah, so that's the thing. It's like every year someone eventually turns on them. last year it was actually the French. Like the French
eventually turns on who? The Spanish or the natives?
On the natives.
Oh, okay,
So like last year the French commander had seen that they weren't protecting their capital. Mm-hmm. And so the French made the first ever capital play in Summer of Plunder history. And that, you know, made everyone angry at the French and they didn't win that year. This year, you know, the Spanish are attacking the natives, but I don't think people are really angry at the Spanish.
In my opinion, the Spanish have been so historically accurate in this campaign where they're just kind of like, I say this with total love. Historically speaking, the Spanish like to flounder around and kind of ineffectually do things. Not to say that they've been ineffectual.
It's not their fault. They're trying to accomplish something for a church, and that's very confusing. The trajectory can be very confusing when you're led by celibate men who are 90.
There's a reason the Spanish royalty started speaking French real quick. But it's interesting to think about like the implications of like, let's just say like this campaign is what happens in real life, right? This all happens. The French take the Northeast. English apparently are just dead. They just all die. You know, they're never seen again, or in the New World. They just go to India and just hang out there, I guess.
Bermuda Triangle.
Sure. And what could happen? Let's think about this, because, you know, I'm a pretty big historical proponent of like you think about your what ifs, right? Let's just say this happens. The French and Indian War does not happen. If the French and Indian War does not happen, American Revolution doesn't happen. If the American Revolution doesn't happen, the French Revolution doesn't happen. If the French Revolution doesn't happen, the Franco-Prussian War doesn't happen. If the Franco-Prussian War doesn't happen, World War I doesn't happen. World War I doesn't happen. Communism doesn't take as much of a hold as it does. Lenin gets the boot and hopefully gets run over by a tractor or whatever. And then if you don't have that, you don't have World War II. If you don't have World War II, you don't have the Cold War. If you don't have the Cold War, you know, it's interesting.
Dr. D has solved all of history. Thank you, Dr. D.
All the French had to do was kick us out of New England, and this would have completely been avoidable. So thanks. Thanks a lot, Kyle.
Thanks a lot, French. Dr. D has solved all of the world's problems, and he's pinned it on the French. Thank you. Thank you.
This darn snail-eating baguette cooking. Disgusting. Is there anything – so before we get too distracted by that, is there anything that you want to say about the campaign before we totally just goof off and do our final thoughts?
I think I'll just – you know, you had mentioned them earlier, and I think it's really important if people are trying to create a campaign. There has to be people that are dedicated at the top, right? So we are kind of saying the praises of the Blood and Pigment crew, Jason, Joseph, and Dan. I think there might be a few others. You know, they're doing an insane amount of work. They're up until 3 a.m. in the morning a few days every week.
Yep, running spreadsheets and doing totals. Like, that takes time behind the scenes. We're waiting for that to come out, but they are working their butts off to get it to us. So much appreciation. Good call out.
I think Joseph even said he has like 13 kids or something. So it's like, it amazes me that somebody who has like... So I don't think he actually has that many, but I think he's got like a family is what I'm getting to. It's like they all have families. They all have like lives. It's not like they just sit around doing
none,
this.
Yeah, day. None of them are losers in their parents' basement.
Jeez. Jeez.
Well, I mean, and also like it just like it speaks to the community. We had the pirate leader. What was his name? On a couple weeks ago, and his sister, Allie. I remember Allie because she's my friend, but I don't remember the pirate leader's name.
You know what? Hold on. Dude, I was going to just guess his name, but that would be very – I want to say it's Daniel. Just cut this out.
I thought it was Daniel too, so it might be Daniel. Okay. Yeah, so, but it was like – it was the pirate leader, and I was like
– I knew that.
Do you have a wife or girlfriend who plays too? And he said, no, but I have a sister. And I said, that works too. Like, I love the community. Like, bring – anybody and everybody in who wants to play this. And that's definitely how Dylan and I got into this. He would have jumped into this game head first, but I discovered it and said, can we play this? And then he was like, yes, please.
That's cool that you found. That's really awesome that you found it.
A shout out to Jeff from Defective Dice, because he totally brought me into this community with Port Royal and his preview on unboxing Port Royal. And as somebody who has ancestors from Spain that my family claims were pirates that I cannot prove, and I like to point that out every time I mention it because they say it, but I am not convinced of it. It's okay. I don't mind being a pirate person, even if we can't prove it. We'll just say it. We're pirates. It's cool.
That's right.
Yeah. I actually just spent the last weekend hanging out with Jeff, and we were all like, we're going to play a bunch of different games because we like the weird games and all this stuff and blah, blah. And it literally just turned into us playing Blood and Plunder and Port Royal for the majority of the weekend.
I did not know that. That's so awesome.
I got to submit like 20 points to the campaign because of all the games we did over that weekend.
English are going to kick some butt this week.
No, because we didn't take Quebec.
Sorry.
Yeah, well, you know, it happens, I suppose. But yeah, it does go to show that, you know, it takes a community, right? It takes a tribe. He even said while we were hanging out, he's like, every single time, he's like, we probably mentioned him more than anyone else on the show that's not like actually like a part of the show. He said we had to start paying him royalties because of the fact that every time
definitely.
We say his name, it definitely shoots up our ratings. Or whatever. We will have him on eventually for Raise the Raise Black. He does really enjoy the game. He said it's like his second favorite game And right now Malifaux's kind of in a weird spot because it's doing its beta thing or whatever. You know,
yeah.
This, but.
Yeah.
So he will be on here eventually. We'll talk about, he actually plays natives. I played natives the very first time this weekend and it was obtuse. Let me put it that way. It's a very different kind of game.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Dr. D had a lot to say when he came back after playing natives. He was like, that was different.
Yeah.
Yeah. You, I mean, you don't usually come home and say much about anything, but you were like, that was different. That natives were different. You did make a comment. So
gotta worry about that fatigue.
Yeah. Love Jeff. Loved Effective Dice. Definitely check out their YouTube channel.
And as something before we go into closing thoughts, as of again, time of recording, we just released our second YouTube video. It's been mostly cyberpunk content. So check out Arachne, a YouTube gaming channel. It will have Blood and Plunder on there. Eventually we are going to be moving to a new home fairly soon, which should have a pretty, it's going to have a great space for a recording area. So we will be putting Blood and Plunder content on there. Just keep your eyes posted on that one. So
yeah, I'm definitely going to push for like YouTube versions of our podcast too. Like maybe maybe unedited. Maybe I won't edit them. We'll just pop it up there and if people want to see the video, they can see it. And if they want to see a great audio, they can listen to the podcast.
Yep.
Nice.
Okay. So let's go into closing thoughts. I guess I'll do it first so we know what's coming. So I think the campaign is obviously going very, very well, even in being in the faction that's probably had the roughest time. Maybe it's my fault. I don't know. Maybe I put too much attention on us, but I feel like we've been having trouble since go. But I've had a really
great time.
You guys
are the biggest. You're the biggest.
Like I said, we're unwieldy, if nothing else. We're everywhere. People don't want us to be.
Too many British cooks in that kitchen.
too many English people standing around. So I think that the campaign has been very, very fun. I've had really no complaints. I've had a blast. I think the French, while I hate them for the reasons that they are my opponents, I do think they've put a very clean game. I don't think they've done anything particularly underhanded other than just knowing who they hate.
I mean, French are always noble and knightly, and you gotta appreciate that.
Exactly. That's why, you know, if you're going to king make someone in these closing weeks, the French is the way to go.
Charlemagne knew what he was doing. Maybe the French know what they're doing. They got it. They got the knightly stuff figured out. They're kind of the origination of the English. You're kind of just an offshoot of the French. You used to speak French. Maybe you should embrace the French more, Dr. D.
No.
These points are compelling.
Yeah, they're very compelling points. That's true. For the record,
my harp teacher would tell you should speak French.
That's true. I will say for Blood and Plunder, for Blood and Bayonets, which will 100% be covered by this channel because I effing love Napoleonic. It will be covered here. I will be playing the French because I'm ready to scream Milan and stab people with a bayonet. It's going to be great. Yeah, so that's my closing thoughts. Kara, what are your closing thoughts on the campaign so far and why the French have managed to ruin it?
I think I've said all of my thoughts already in this episode, but I will say that the French are doing a great job. Their monarchy focus is really going to kill them in the last week or two, because the pirates, we have a democracy and we are focused on pulling it out in the last week or two. So you go. We're hoping that you will take us over in the next couple of weeks, kind of beat us up a little bit, and then we're going to swoop in at the end and surprise everybody.
This is the time, right? Where you don't necessarily want to be right on top.
Right. Like I'm hoping for you French to take over for us, like take us out of the lead for a minute and then we'll swoop right in.
Hello, Dr. D here. For some reason, the audio for my track went out, so there's going to be probably like a little jump here where it may not make complete sense based on what we were talking about. We're in the new house at this point, so some of the audio might be a little weird until we get everything fixed up. So thanks for listening, guys, and I hope you enjoy the rest of the episode. Bye!
I've just really enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed being able to make some new friends, both with the people in the French Discord and then some of the commanders, too, like talking to them and getting to know them better. I live in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. We have a small community here, but just being able to talk to people in other places, it builds a really great sense of community that is special. It's really special. So next year, I plan on playing Blood and Plunder, not just Legion.
I don't think I'm going to Adepticon. It's like in 2 weeks.
No.
Gen Con, gotcha. Yes, because I totally told her this week, yes, we're totally going to Gen Con. And then I was like, I'm a liar. I'm sorry, we're going to Nova. I'll be dressed like a whore. I mean, what's the point if you can't dress like a pirate whore? What's wrong with whore? Whore is a fine, acceptable word. Please explain to me the difference. If you want to find me, you can find me at Scarlit, Scarlit, Widow, Widow, on Discord. And if you need to email me, I'm going to send you to Dr. D's furypainting at gmail.com.
Yeah, on the Discord, you can find me at The Carp with a K. And if you like wildlife photography, I take wildlife photos, and you can see that at thecarp14 on Instagram.
Ooh, I am definitely going to follow you tonight. Bye. Raise the flag and hoist the sails for the seas we roam. The cauldron bubbles, rich and warm, our hearts they call it home. With spices from the seven seas and tales of daring flight. We toast to her, our captain true, and your moon and stars so bright.
Gales and waters deep, Dr. D's guidance was our guide. The Scarlet Widow, fierce and proud, with honor and with pride. Inventor of soup on the ocean vast, his name forever sung. An adventurer, a captain, a jaunty lass, upon the seas they flung. Raise the flag and hoist the sails, for the seas we roam. The cauldron bubbles, rich and warm, our hearts they call it home. With spices from the seven seas and tales of daring flight, we toast to her, our captain true, moon and stars so bright.